All right, well, Kufar Akbar, everybody, welcome to another edition of the Cross and the Crescent Discussion Group. This is, indeed, again, once again, a blog talk radio program dedicated to rightly dividing the truth behind Christianity and Islam. We're here every Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time. That would be 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that would be the middle of the afternoon if you're in California. Thank you, everybody, for coming. I see the chat's gotten really active in the last 2 minutes when we come on. I don't know if they come to just watch the intro and then they leave or what goes on with that, but we have a really good intro. Thank you to our sister Connie for doing that. She just updated that this week, and I think we're going to be updating it again this week, because we want to do a better clip with Boko Haram when they kidnapped all those Christian girls out of that school. And Michelle Obama thought that maybe doing a hashtag. But is hashtag Twitter? That's Twitter. Okay. So let's do a hashtag, bring back our girls, and that'll work. Yeah. And it still goes on today. Nigeria, Christians are brutalized there every single day. Entire villages at times. So she's going to update that, and we'll probably have a much better piece of that to be able to put into the intro next week. All right, so this week we want to do two things, and all y'all that are listening, I really sound southern when I say that, I know, all y'all, as I said, before we came on the air, we took a vote on whether or not we were going to lead off with mocking the mockable, or doing the top 10 list that I developed, the top 10 reasons why I'm not a Muslim. And what kind of prompted me to do that is that our friend, and I still consider him a brother in Christ, I've had some tough words. Well, let me just put it, it's probably just a one-way street. And Stephen Adkins, I'm not sure if you know who Stephen is, but he's a bloke from the UK, or not the UK, Canada. He's from Canada. He's a Canuck. Yeah, he's up there with Chris Claus. And I saw that Chris Claus was live this afternoon. He's doing a live stream right now. Anyway, what was I saying about Stephen? Stephen is going to be doing a live stream called Why I'm a Christian. And he wants to talk about all the reasons why he's a Christian, which is a great, you know, that's a great, great live stream to do. And I agree that we should, and whenever we can, tell people, you know, the reasons for the hope that is in us. However, an advertisement for this was sent to me, and he's going to be accompanied by a certain imam out of Houston. And you hear something or you read something and you're just like, you know, your mouth is wide. He's like, are you still going to deal with this guy? So I sent him a couple messages, you know, just to, you know, say, hey, what are you doing? Are you aware of this and what he's not only did to me, but what he just did to Rad a couple weeks ago, by calling him a pedophile and just about every, you know, nasty thing under the planet. And yes. Who did this? His mom. His mom took down a bunch of pictures herself. Mm-hmm. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. All right. Well, okay, that makes sense. All right. All right. Yeah. Wow, that's, I don't know, that would be a tough thing, you know, for a family to endure, is, you know, your eternal destiny is separated by your faith. And, you know, he's solid professor, Dalagandist himself. And then you have, you know, if I remember my mom, she was just a very devout Christian, godly woman that, you know, you would always get the gospel message at her house, whether you wanted it or not. And that would be a very difficult thing to have to endure, to have to deal with as a child. And I would pray for him that he sees that and returns back to his faith of his youth. Yeah. Okay. So today we're going to start off. The vote was. Did I tell you what the vote was? We're going to start off with mocking the mockable. Did I say that what we were going to do? I think I did. Okay, all right. I just want to make sure I got that down so everybody understands which direction we're going. But we're going to start off with a parody of the Mock Arena, Islamic style. I'll tell you what prompted me to do this. What prompted me to do this was I was scrolling through. I'm going to have Bob the Builder on the show, and I'm going to his show next month. And so I was watching a couple clips with him in Hyde Park, Speaker's Corner, and this Hamza guy comes up and just interrupts him and starts, you know, putting his arm around, and it just starts acting like, what's that word, Ed, that we were using at the beginning of the show? We said that we could use it? Right, it's acting like one of those. Right, that's what, yeah, and thank you for spelling it correctly, because we didn't want to think people that we didn't know how to spell on the show. But he was acting like that to Bob, so I kind of thought, well, let's go to his channel and see what, you know, so I put down Hamza Mayet. How do you pronounce his last name? You guess not pronounce this guy's last name? Is it Matt or Mayet or, it's not even that, it's something like Yabba Dabba Doo, he changed his name, but anyway, oh, no, that was, his original name was, is not Hamza. It's something else. I think he introduces his name like as Richard. Hi, my name is Richard. No, it's not. You change your name to Hamza. At least be proud of your. Anyway, so what we did was we decided to open the show with a little dance. Let's go ahead and make that full screen. Go ahead, Rad. We'll play about 30 seconds of this. Okay, I remember when this, not the dance, but this type of sword dance was performed when, I think it was either George W. Bush went to visit the Saudis, I think. Was it Trump that did that? Really? Okay. Well, I remember there was a president, one of our presidents in Saudi Arabia, where you have a certain percentage of people there that does not like the United States, does not like our president. And these guys are doing this sword thing. And I guess that was just a parody of them doing that sword dance to the Macarena. So so what is so mockable about this spell is what we're going to be getting into. Yeah, well, so I thought we'd start off, and it was our sister Darcy who gave us that idea. Thank you, Darcy, for that. It was a brilliant idea. Okay, so we're going to be going to this video. It's called Hamza and James, Who Authored the Quran, Part 1. Now, I was not able to, I barely stomached Part 1, and there is a Part 2, and I've kind of glanced through the Part 2, reading through the transcript. And I don't know if we're going to do a part two to this. We might, depending on how well this goes today. But we're going to start at the 41-second mark. They're rad. If you want to get your screen to the 41-second mark. And we're going to play this to 1 minute and 6 seconds. And this is what caught my eye or ear when I was why I decided to do this. So let's go ahead and play that going ahead. Whoops. Whoa. Why aren't you in the stream? There we go. Okay, go ahead. All right, that's good. Go ahead and pause it. Go ahead and pause it. All right, so you made several different... Well, there's a lot of problems with this. I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I got 11 things that are wrong here. Okay, number one. Well, this is the point. You know, he didn't memorize, when he says that he memorized all of these things, he didn't memorize the Bible. He didn't memorize the Talmud or any of those things. He was exposed to it. This much is true. He was exposed to it. Whether it was during his time as, and okay, so let's first off start with the starting point here is when I say that he was exposed to it as he traveled, or he was exposed to it as people came through Mecca using the standard Islamic narrative that, number one, Mecca existed at this time, which it didn't, but this is the supposition, the presupposition that Hamza is making. And the second thing is that we're using as a presupposition is that Muhammad existed at this time. So he's saying that Muhammad memorized this stuff while being illiterate, and that's not true. And how could he get it and then rehash it? And we know that he rehashed it because, he gets the number of days it took to create the heavens and the earth wrong, and he even gets it wrong because he, in one part it says 6 days, another one 7 days, and another one 8 days. Am I right on that? Okay, he didn't know where the Garden of Eden was because he starts off saying the Garden of Eden was in heaven and that Adam and Eve were cast down from heaven out of the Garden of Eden. He didn't know which member of Noah's family was drowned in the flood. Am I right on this, that there's one of Noah's family members died during the flood? Okay. Okay. That's what I was thinking of, his son. Okay, so he didn't know that Haman, the character that we find in the book of Esther, Haman, existed 1,000 years after Pharaoh. So he gets that mixed up. He didn't know. He didn't know who drew Moses out of the Nile River. According to the Bible, it was the daughter of the Pharaoh, and according to the Quran, it's the wife of the Pharaoh. So he mixes that up. Then he said that we'll find him in the Torah, the Psalms, or the Injil. We still haven't found him, especially in the Psalms. I'm wondering if we find him in the Psalms, for Pete's sake. Let me know when that PowerPoint's ready to roll, Ed. Let's see here. The bodies of the prophets, all these prophets that were supposedly buried in Mecca, where are they? This is a big one. He didn't understand. He did not know what the Trinity was. You go to Quran 5:116, and when Allah saith, "O Jesus, son of Mary, didst thou say unto mankind, take me and my mother for two gods besides Allah?" That's stupid. Why would you ask Jesus that question? That's stupid. Right, yeah, right. Why is he asking Jesus a question? Very good. Okay, and then 4:171. "O people of the book, commit no excess in your reason, nor say God aught but the truth, Jesus, son of Mary, was no more than an apostle to God. His word, which he bestowed on Mary, a spirit proceeding from him. So, blah, blah, blah. Say not. So this view, what is this? This must be Sahih International. It says, say not Trinity here, but that's not what it says. It says, say not three. It gives the actual number. And this clearly demonstrates that Muhammad had no clue of Christian theology. The same thing in 573. They do blaspheme and say God is one of three in a Trinity. That doesn't say Trinity there, for there is no God except one God. He didn't realize that Jesus had died on a cross. How did he know all these things, Hamza? The problem is that, well, I'll get to that. He did not know Jesus rose again according to the scriptures. He was supposed to die on a cross according to the scriptures. All that 1 Corinthians 15 stuff. And he didn't realize Jesus had actually claimed to be the Son of God in the New Testament. So all of these things, Hamza. And there's many more. I'm sure all of us could start reciting all kinds of different things that that Muhammad said that are simply wrong about the Bible. But these are just a couple that I was typing. That's what I'm doing here. I was just typing and just off the top of my head. Okay, Rad, we need to go to this is only a short part here. Go from 1 minute 33 to 1:38. About 5 seconds. Are you there? 1:33 to 1:30. No, get it close. All right, good. Stop. All right, so. His standard is all you have to do is just show what he has is not from God. Right. Well, there's all kinds of things that we could do that Hamza would be able to defend. As far as the historical parts of that, and that's actually in the slideshow. If you guys would have let me do my top 10 reasons why I'm not a Muslim first, instead of voting me off the island, we would know these things already. But there's... It's ahistorical. You're exactly right. There's so many things in it that are ahistorical that it's laughable that anybody actually believes that this is from God. Or you could say that the interpretation
the miracle of reinterpretation. And they sit there and they go, yabba dabba doo, habba na manaha. And they say, okay, what that means is whatever I want it to mean, so it doesn't make me look or make the Quran look incorrect. And that's a popular debating tactic by, who's that big tall fella at Speaker's Corner? Hijab, right, Muhammad Hijab, yeah, Muhammad Hijab, yeah. That's a very popular debating tactic by that guy. I mean, it's just, the Quran says, and what this means is, and then he gives his own interpretation instead of looking at what the translators, people who, actually get paid to translate the Quran and know the linguistics behind it, and also he'll ignore, he'll ignore what the tafsir writers have to say about it. He'll say something completely different. And then we find that a lot with, Well, he's a big dude. I mean, have you seen how big that guy is? I mean, he's like 20 or something. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but you're right. I agree 100%. He uses that size to try to intimidate
other people. I'm watching a lot of Bob the Builder videos here as of late to make sure that when he does come to the show, I got, you know, some coherent questions to ask him. But that's one of the, he got into a debate with Hijab, and Hijab's just up on him, looking down on him, and Bob just giving it right, you know, just, he's not intimidated by him. He talks right back into his face. Well, Jay Smith, actually, when Jay Smith debated him, Jay was on a ladder and Hijab wasn't, and they were about the same height. It was like, holy crap, he's a big guy. But anyway, all right, I don't want to make it about him. Go ahead. All right, we're going to go on to the next clip, and it's at 3 minutes, 52 seconds, Rad. 3 minutes, 52 seconds, and again, six seconds. So we're going to go from 3:52 to 3:58. 3:52 to 3:58. You're a whole minute off there. Go to 3:52. Three. Right there. Good. Right there. Right. I believe this is true because, well, he says it's true. Right. Yeah. But here's... same type of reasoning. I mean, you're talking about the credibility of somebody. He gets into this shtick and this tantrum of where James, the guy that he's talking to, says that Muhammad's a liar. So this is what really sends Hamza off, but we'll get to that. But okay, if this indeed is from the Creator, let me read a verse from the Quran, and you tell me, would this be from the Creator? Would this be from the same God that we find in the Old and the New Testament? You tell me if this verse would come from that same type of God that we find in the Old and New Testament. Chapter 5, verse 33, Surah 5, ayat 33. It says, the recompense of those who wage war against Allah and his messenger and do mischief in the land is only that they should be killed or crucified, or their hands and feet to be cut off on opposite sides. That's the eternal word from the Creator of the universe. So when he says that, what did he say? This is from the Creator. I know the Quran is from the Creator, really. Okay, so the Creator would tell somebody to crucify people. Is that right? The Creator of the universe would tell people to crucify people if they, who wage war against Allah and do mischief in the land. Well, what is mischief? That's what I heard once upon a time. Yeah. Well, this is assuming the standard Islamic narrative. I'm a Pinocchio. There you go. That's funny. Oh, and Darcy was out. She's seen 6'11 basketball player. Too bad he wasn't put on the court. Why wouldn't? Okay, if you're 6'11, you don't get put on the court. You must stink. I mean, I mean, I've seen some guys that big, and the coordination factor comes into fact. But yeah. Okay, let's jump ahead to minute 5:14 to 5:30. 5:14 to 5:30. 5:14 to 5:30. Okay, that's good. That's good, Rad. Rad, hold up, Rad. Okay, you're gonna have to back it up to 5:40 for the next one. Yeah. Okay. So he says that it took 23 years. Over 23 years, it took him to get his revelation out. So he made it up every time he's having a revelation, or he's not. Yes, he's making it up every time he supposedly has a revelation. Well, I don't understand why that's so hard to believe when we start measuring against other texts from history and see how many things within the Quran itself that he screws up. And then some of those things that he reveals, he has to abrogate. So how do you explain that if you get a revelation from God and then God turns around and changes it on you? That makes zero sense. But Hams is very confident in his form of argumentation here. Here's what I find, because there are parts of the Quran that contradict each other, and this is demonstrable. You can demonstrate this. I mean, you can say the number of days of creation, but the one that I really like is what people are going to eat in hell. Have you guys heard this one? What they're going to eat in hell? They're going to eat one of three things. They're going to either eat this really prickly pear type cactus thing. It just sounds nasty. I wouldn't want to get close to it. Okay. The second thing they're going to eat is something from some tree. I don't even know what the name of the tree is. Maybe it is this. That's right. There was a zakum. Are there these two different things? Okay. Okay. So if you are a Dawagandist or somebody who is apologist for Islam, you say, well, these are the two same things. This comes from the whatever tree that you said it was. And you can make that argument. But the third thing that they say that you're going to, the only thing people in hell are going to eat is the pus from people's wounds. So if you notice, the pus from people's wounds is completely different than something from a tree. But yet, that's where it says in the Quran, this is the only thing people in hell are going to eat. And it does give the qualifier only. So when we start talking about, you know, is the Quran from God? Can you show that it's not from God? And he's going to get this over 20. Are you saying that he lied? Yes. Yes. Yes, we are. We're saying that he lied about this. And we can clearly demonstrate it using your own sources as we go along. Okay. Oh, with the Opcron, right? All right, we're going to jump over to the 5 minutes 40 second mark, Brad. And I'm not sure how long this is supposed to play because Hamza asked a question about the character of Muhammad pre-Islam. So go ahead and start there and see what he's got to say. Okay, Rad, you're way off. You're way off, Rad. Did you start? Right. All right, well, maybe I'm wrong on that. Yeah, maybe I'm right. Yeah, then this is let's see. I guess I might have messed that one up, but he does ask about the character of Muhammad. Did he say something about the character of Muhammad prior to Islam? Was that in there? So what he's asking him, here's what he's asking him. He goes, I want you to tell me what the character of Muhammad was prior to the advent of Islam. So that would be the equivalent of saying, well, I want you to tell me what Florida in Orlando was like before Mickey Mouse became a dominant figure in that city. It's a fairy tale is what it is. You're asking a guy to talk about a guy that, number one, lived in a city that we've clearly demonstrated several times on this show in several different shows that did not exist in the 7th century, let alone for the 4,000 years that it claims to have existed when Abraham and Ishmael supposedly built that Kaaba that is in Mecca today. So you're starting with a supposition based on a foundation that is not true. How can you say that a man lived in a city that did not exist at that time? And how can you demand somebody to tell about his character in a city that doesn't exist and probably a man who historically did not exist? Because the only thing that we know about Muhammad contemporaneously to Muhammad is from Islamic sources. We do not get it from any other source. There's no other history out there about this guy in the 7th century. Well, I take that back. There's a coin. Oh, how's that go? It doesn't matter. But we have a mention of him like 50 years after, but it doesn't say anything about him being a prophet or anything like that. Have a cross on it. This is true. Yeah. So why would you have a cross on a Muslim? He pretends to be one, or he pretends at least to follow the same God of the Jews. There's a book, Dan Janicek, and he writes a book on a guy by the name of John of Damascus. And John of Damascus lived
in the 8th century, or majority, spent the majority of his life in the 8th century. And in his writings, he doesn't mention the word Muslim. You know, he says that they what they've done is they perverted the scriptures of the time. So even, 120 years after, or over 100 years after the death of Muhammad, you still have this guy saying that these people don't even, they don't even know what they believe. He doesn't mention the Quran. They don't have any book there. And they don't have any type of, I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, what he says about it. But he says that it's nothing like what when you compare what he writes, it's not the Islam that we know today. The Islam we know today, based on more and more detailed study, is an Islam that was redacted back upon history and has been spoon-fed to people over the centuries, demanding that they believe it. And if you don't believe it, well, that's apostasy, don't you see? But we all know, according to the Sharia, which we've gone through several times on the show, what happens to people who commit apostasy. And it does not end well for them. It ends badly most days. Okay, so let's move to the next one. 6 minutes, 9 seconds, Rad. We got too far ahead of myself on this, and I apologize. But he asked, was Muhammad a liar? Just play it up about the 6 minute, 14 second point. Okay, so Hamza is demanding here, give me one example in all of, let me say, all of Muhammad's history where he lied. Okay, so no problem. Here we go. I'm going to share my screen, and let's make this big. And let's go, and this is Sahih al-Bukhari. Just so you all understand, this is a Sahih hadith, and it is narrated when Abdullah bin Salam heard the arrival of the Prophet at Medina. He came to him, and I'm going to ask you three things which nobody knows except the Prophet. And we've been through this several times on this show. He asked, what's going to happen at the end of days? What's the first meal you eat in paradise? And then, of course, why does a child resemble its father? Why does it resemble its maternal uncle, which would be its mother? And so Gabriel, of course, Muhammad's like, okay, Gabriel has just now given me the answers. Okay, so we're asking for here, give me an example where Muhammad lied. That's what he asked. Is that what he asked? Yes, three, four times. Am I right on that? Is that what he asked for? Give me an example of where Muhammad lied. Okay, fine. Here we go. Here's where he lied. He said that the first portent will be out of fire. Okay, fine. Well, there's no way to prove that. We don't know, where the world's going to end by fire. You can believe that, but there's no way to prove it. The first meal in paradise will be fish liver. Okay, there's no way to prove that. But there's a way to prove this one. As for the resemblance of a child to his parents, if a man has sexual intercourse with his wife and gets discharged first, the child will resemble him. And if the woman gets discharged first, the child will resemble her. So if you want to say that Muhammad was a liar, now this is from Bukhari. Keep in mind, when al-Tabari, 100 and some odd years later, did a commentary, did a tafsir on al-Bukhari, he said that any hadith that is classified as being sahih has a 99 to 100% of being authentic. So if you're believing this guy 3 centuries after the death of Muhammad, that this is a authentic hadith because it is sahih according to Bukhari, that Muhammad said such and such, and oh, by the way, where did he get this? Where did he get the answer to this? Let's just jump back here and take a look. Where did he get this answer? Let's see here. He says, Allah's message. He, Gabriel, from the Los Angeles, He said, Gabriel has now just given me the answer. So what he's saying is that, okay, you're going to ask me these questions. Guess what? Gabriel just gave me this answer. Please listen to me. And we know that this is a lie. So Hamza, if you're asking, just give me one example of the lie. There you go. It's right there for you. There's your Sahih Hadith, 99 to 100% being authentic, that we know Muhammad lied. Because if he's saying that, if if he's saying that Gabriel, okay, either Muhammad's a liar or Gabriel's a liar. One of the two's a liar. I'm not sure which one that you would be worse for you here. Maybe Gabriel is lying to him, trying to set him up, make him look like a fool. Does that make a lot of sense to you? I would hope not. Okay, let's go to the next one. I know where you're going. Right. Right. Well, anything from fish. I would think somebody living in Arabia, anything that you get from fish would be a delicacy because it's enough. Well, if you live the type of lifestyle that they did, I mean, 7th century Arabia, if this is indeed authentic. And remember when we were discussing, it was 2 weeks ago, I think we were talking about the existence of Mecca, and I was going through, all of those people who had gone through that region and described the region and described the geography there. They said it was inhabitable. So if you come from a region that is classified as being uninhabitable, sorry, bad choice of words there, uninhabitable, and anything that would be like fish, anything from a fish would seem like a delicacy and seem like this heavenly thing that you would receive. But you're absolutely right. I mean, this is to try to portray heaven or an afterlife as being anything in kind. Where the pleasures that you receive in this lifetime would be the equivalent which you would receive in eternity, that really makes no sense at all. Okay, Rad, we are moving up. This is going to be a 20-second clip. We're going to go up to 7 minutes and 20 seconds, if you can get there. Are you with me, Rad? Who did we have drop out? Did Connie drop again? Her phone. Okay. All right. So 7 minutes, 20 seconds. Go ahead and play it until 7:40. Okay, stop. Okay. So where's he getting these words from? Okay, I can tell you exactly where we know we've got these. Right. Okay. Well, there's four places where we know he got these things. Four places. There's four places that we know. We know that he got them from Gnostic sources. There's all kinds of different things that we find in the Quran that are clear ripoffs from Gnostic ideas and almost verbatim ripoffs from different stories that we find in Gnostic stories and also in apocryphal stories. So Gnostic and apocryphal stories. The Jewish Talmud and the Midrash, we know he ripped things off from there. So he's asking, well, where did he get these things? How can he possibly? He's ripping them off. Is what he's plagiarizing them. And then something else like the Syriac folklore, you know, that's the seven sleepers, the story of the seven sleepers in the cave. You know, that's a bedtime story for little kids. So we know the sources. You know, if he's illiterate, where does he get these words? He gets them from these sources here. Now, this next point that he makes. I'm going to spend a little bit of time on, and you'll see exactly why. Go ahead. Who's the what? Do I want to? What did you say it was? 86 what? Oh my gosh. All right. I'm going to have to put this restriction on this show. Okay. Chapter 86, 6 and 7.
Okay. All right. So he was created. Okay. So let man. So let man consider what he was made of. That's verse 5. He was created of spurting water. Verse 6. Verse 7. Issuing from between the backbone and the ribs. Yeah, I've heard that one before. I just didn't know it was located in chapter 86. Yeah, I've heard that. How do you apply that to a woman though? That I don't understand. Chesticles. Okay, I need to see. I'm deaf, and when you guys say these nuances on words, I don't get them right away. But that. And see, yeah. Okay, Issa, don't be stealing my thunder. This is part of my top 10 reasons why I'm not a Muslim. I'm gonna do that today. Okay, so this next one we're going to spend some time on. So if you go to 744 Red, and we're going to play to 749. 744 to 749. Let's put that right there. All right, go ahead. Okay, go ahead. Stop. Okay, so he's talking about poetry has come blowing up away. Every poet that ever lived in the time of Mecca, according to those poets, that's what he's saying. So according to those poets that lived at the time of Mecca or that lived at the time of Muhammad coming out of the area of Mecca. Now, how many people here could produce some type of manuscript evidence showing what the people, those poets that he's talking about out of Mecca, where what they come from, what they were saying at that time. Well, I mean, hold on. Ed, what did you say? There's zero. And notice he said, the poets around Mecca are saying that he's blowing away any other type of poetry that they could ever produce. Well, I got to thinking about that. I'm thinking, well, why would the poets around Mecca would they say that? Well, let me show you why they would say that. I'm glad you asked. Okay, let's go ahead and do this. When we look at the people that Muhammad had killed, what do you think he had them killed for? Let's see here. Killed the Jewish poet for opposing Muhammad through poetry. Let's see here. This next one revealed about for mocking the Quran, tales from the ancients. So he was, let's see here, because he mocked and harassed Muhammad and wrote poems and stories criticizing him. Let's see, Kaban al-Asrif, Muhammad ordered his followers to kill Kab because he had gone to Mecca after Badr invade against Muhammad and composed verses in which he bewailed the victims shortly afterwards. Okay, so he composed what? Verses of poetry in which he was against Muhammad. Abu Rafi mocking Muhammad with his poetry. If you know, mocking Muhammad with his poetry had him killed. Number 20 for... killed Abdu bin Qatal for killing a slave and fleeing, as well for reciting poems insulting Muhammad. Let's see, Fartana. Yeah, that's kind of a, I don't know, are they making these names? I'm kidding. I just think of some of the jokes that people would talk about, like how did Native Americans name their children? Well, it was the first thing that the father saw when he, after the child was born, like your name is, you know, two birds flying or the bear prances, you know, or something like that. Well, here you would have fart tonight. It's, I don't. Right. Well, this is his argument.
Yeah,
his argument is that all the poets around there knew what was the words. He was blowing away every other poetry in Arabia, according to the poets that lived in Mecca at that time. Notice there's no citation of who these poets were, but the poets that we do know about that comes from the Ahadith in Sira literature, well, here, this is what's happening to them. Oh, I'm not done yet. Hold on. I told you to spend a little bit of time with this. Hold on. Here we go. So little Fartna gets killed for singing songs about Muhammad. And then we got Karabaha. Let's see. This is a slave girl of the guy above. And she used to sing songs. So these two girls got killed for singing songs. These are slave girls of this guy here. Okay, so he kills that guy, kills his two slave girls. And then you got, it's hard to say. Kafir lives matter. Okay, Ibn Ishaq says Muhammad ordered Sarah to be killed because she had insulted him in Mecca. So here you have the insult here. Okay, here you have Ka'b bin Zuhair Abi Suluma, whoever, one of his poems recorded by Ibn Ishaq includes the line, I was told that the Messenger of Allah threatened me with death, but the Messenger of Allah, I have hope finding a pardon. So he's reciting poetry. Al-Harith bin Talatil. For mocking Muhammad through poetry. Abu Zin Zabera, insult for writing insulting poems about Muhammad. Haburera, cousin of Zabera, for mocking Muhammad through what? You'll never guess it. Through poetry. Here you have a blind man's concubine, and she was killed. He killed her when he learned that happened. She had, killed by a Muslim on his own initiative because the woman insulted Muhammad. And then Muhammad said that there's no retaliation for her blood. And Ibn Sunya, kill for any Jew that falls into your power. Heard this one out. Okay, maybe that doesn't have anything to do with poetry. So maybe I got a little ahead of myself on that one. But anyway, you see that there's several people, Mr. Hamza, that get themselves killed for daring to write poetry in the Arabian Peninsula at that time. And so when you start saying, well, it was the top five poets at that time, no, they're not. And if there is those top five poets, and I did look this up, it's in the Quran someplace, and that's why he says it. But there's no record for it. There's nobody around to say who these poets were. So go ahead and save it. All right. Anybody have anything else that they want to add to that? Okay. Okay. All right. Oh, let's go to 848 to 853, Rad. 848 to 853. Here we have unidentified people saying that the Quran was magic. So let me put this up here. 848 to 8, wrong one, sorry. All right, let me, hold on. Okay, let me remove mine and add the stream. There we go. All right, go ahead. Okay, Rad, go ahead and stop. Great. So, Rad, go ahead and stop it. All right, so.
the poet. Yeah, so he's saying that these people are saying that what is so his let's see. His poetry that he's reciting is so beautiful that only it was only magic can produce something like this. All the while failing to recognize that it's actually from God. And, you know, when we start thinking about really stupid arguments, one of these Twitter things, hashtag really stupid arguments, this would be one of them. And plus, again, he's very vague on the details, just like the Quran is all over the place. It's vague on details, and this is why we know it's made up, because there's no details in it. But this, again, here we have nobody's name that said this. It's just that the general public is making this accusation towards Muhammad, which it isn't true. But anyway, go ahead. Yeah, that's a scope, right? Okay. Yeah, so when we start talking about a rabbit hole, the Quran is filled with them. And the number one is Mecca. Okay, let's see here. Let's go to 9:18. Keep in mind, this is a 30-minute video, folks, so I don't think we're going to get through it, to be honest with you. Maybe we can finish it up next week. Plus, there's a part two. There's always more we can add to this. Okay. That'd be a good idea. Okay, let's go to 9:18 through 40. So this is a 22-second thing I want to... Okay, go ahead and start there. Go ahead. Stop. The only thing I can do is relay what five top Arab poets said when relating the Quran. Okay, so if you're... Yeah, which type five... Hold on! Let me say this. Which top five Arab poets, right? Which type of five Arab poets are you referring to, Hamza? I would like to know what their names are, and I would like to see what they wrote. If you were going to make this assertion, let me find it. Okay, I'm trying to find the source for this. I'm almost there. Hold on. Let's see here. Okay. The Quran. That's right. Okay, I'm trying to find which verse this comes from, but I did. It's just a 60-something. Sir of the Poets, Quran, what's this, Quran 27, oh, this is a paper, okay, it doesn't matter, but there is a verse in the Quran that does mention five poets, but just like everything else Quranic, there it's vague and ambiguous. Who are these people? Where do they come from? What do they say? This is a better question, what qualifies Muhammad's poetry as better than other poets, and where's the rubric for measuring the qualification of being superior poetry? You don't get it, and the reason why you don't get it, because it's all made up. That's why you don't get it. Let's see here.
All right. And let's see, 9:50 to 9:55. Oh, here's this is what Dowagandists do. 9:50 to 9:50, this is a common tactic, and you see it every week at Speaker's Corner. Go ahead. 5 seconds. Stop right there. That's just, you know. Yeah. I was not going to say anything about the man's appearance. I've kind of made a commitment to myself to just leave that out of it. So the thing is that this is from 5 years ago or 4 years ago. Anyway, it's kind of an older video. And like I said, I just happened on it. And one of the first things out of this guy's mouth is you don't know anything. And how do you have a conversation with somebody? And here's what I have found all the time when, and because this is, you know, something you have no real knowledge. I mean, have you had somebody, you know, when you're having a discussion with a Muslim that they're going to say, well, you don't have any real knowledge. You don't even know your own Bible. Like, I know your Bible better than you do. And the problem with arguing with people or having a discussion with people like that is that they know so many facts. And they present all of these facts, but those facts are not true. So they'll go ahead and throw out fact after fact after fact after saying, but they're just they're either number one, they're not true, or number two, they're simply just out of context sayings of the Bible. So you know what these guys do. This is just a prime example. You know, James, you don't know anything. No, the fact is that he probably knows 10 times as much about the historicity, sorry, Paul, of Islam than what you do. That's probably your problem. Okay, you don't understand in the Arabic. It says yabba dabba do in the Arabic, and you don't know what that means. I do, and this is what it means. This is my translation. But what, you know. Yeah, that's amazing when you hear that from, well, it's in Arabic. Well, do you know Arabic? Well, yeah. And we had a certain imam try to say that one day on the show, and we just happened to have John Isaac in the audience, and he left really quick. Not John Isaac, that imam did. Okay, let's go to 12-minute mark. 12 minutes, and we're going to play it for 4 seconds. 12 minutes and play it for 4 seconds, and I keep bringing this up, and I'm going to hammer it home until my dying breath. Go ahead. Stop. Two words. Prove it. Present your evidence. Show me your evidence. Outside of Islamic sources, show me your evidence. Show me any type of archaeological evidence for the existence of Mecca. Show me any type of manuscript evidence, any cartographical evidence, any graphical evidence. Any of these evidences would be just fine if you could show me. So even somebody mentioning Mecca by name, not some Makaraba or some other, or Becca, right? Yeah, in the Becca Valley, and you know, so they do cite that. And I think that's from a psalm, if I'm not mistaken. Or the valley of Becca. Okay, you notice in that same, not even the chapter, but in the same verse, and it says the pools of Becca. If anybody look at Becca doesn't have too many pools in it. Yeah, it, the reason why is it only gets 4 inches of rain a year. So, to you know, what's that? Well. It's a what fallacy? Phonetic? Yeah, phonetic failure.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Because when you start making when he starts, and you notice he makes all of these rapid fire type assertions, saying that, well, you don't know this because this says this and this says this and this says, no, it doesn't. And you can't prove any of the things that you're presenting here. You cannot demonstrate to me that Mecca existed in the 7th century. You cannot, and if Mecca didn't exist in the 7th century, neither did this guy Muhammad. And this is one of those three pillars that Jay Smith has been talking about and rattling for the last couple of years, is book and the man, the book and the man, the man and the book, the book and the man. But now he's adding location, which is Mecca. Because if you take that chair, ain't going to stand. If you take away one of those three legs, it's like death, deity, and resurrection. You take one of those three legs away from Christianity, the whole thing falls. Well, the same thing applies to Islam. Book, all three of them have to be, you have to demonstrate clearly that all three of them existed at the same time and in the same place. And you can't do that. As a matter of fact, you just the opposite. Right. The whole, yeah, and it should fall. We were in that meeting the other night, Paul, that meeting that you missed the other night. Okay, we were actually, I felt like I was being put on the spot by those guys. No. It was great because they asked me if I would want to do like a Twitter feed that they would boost on that by saying some of these facts. And I don't know diddly squat about Twitter. I have an account. But I don't know anything. But anyway, okay. And I'm just going to roll with the purchase of that one. Yeah, go ahead. What John in Damascus was, he was
like a bookkeeper in Damascus, okay? His dad was, and he just took over the job from his dad. Well, the Muslims had come in, he calls them Saracens, had come in and conquered the city and used John of Damascus in their service. So they kept the people that were in the, the bureaucracy, okay, that were in the bureaucracy, they kept those people so they could operate the city and continue to receive their jizya and exercise their power. And this is the perspective he provides. Now, he eventually got out of that and ended up becoming a monk or a priest or something. I can't remember exactly what he became. But that's the perspective that he provides. He says that I don't think he mentions Muslims at all. I think he just says Saracens is what he called these people, and is based on being part of a society or a culture there in Damascus and being conquered at that time. Okay, so let's see. 1248, Hamza asserts that Muhammad was known as being an honest prior to Islam. Again, we just beat that dead horse. Muhammad said the Quran says that Muhammad was honest prior to Islam. That's just a stupid argument. Okay. Let's go ahead. What's the source veteran? What'd you say? Would you say that was the source for that, Ed? Google says it. Oh, well, it must be true then, right? Prophet Google, right? Yeah. That's part of the Quranic geography that Dan Gibson talks about, having the access to fly from Mecca all the way up to Petra. That, you know, that's an argument that he makes. That's probably what it is. Okay. Wikipedia. Well, you know, the thing with Wikipedia, I'll go through and read. I'll read Wikipedia articles, but I won't. I go in and I check the sources, and then if it doesn't have a citation, it's not true. And I'll go down and I'll check the citations and see how credible the citations are. So it's a good way to, you know, look information up, but it's not a great way to confirm information unless you're able to go in and look at the primary. We tell them not to. No. Right. Yeah. You can't cite Wikipedia. You have to cite the original source. Now, Wikipedia, like I was saying, often cites the original sources. So when I talk to the students about that, I always tell them, I said, always click on that blue number there and go down and look that source up. And if you're able to cite from that source or at least find that source, then that's the source that you use. But you don't use Wikipedia as a source when you're citing for your papers. Okay. You're right, and that's why you always go to primary source. You go to sources for what Wikipedia posts. Connie, you're looking at that. Right. Same. I've had the same problem. Here's what I did. I went to the Democratic Party, where it says the Democrat Party, and then I put down the official flag is the white flag of surrender for that party, and I made the edit, and I wasn't able to post after that for some reason. Yeah. Okay, let's... Okay, let's go to Rad. You still there? I know we've kind of Rad. You still there? We're going to go to the 12-minute mark. Rad. Oh, Rad. This is not good. Okay. 12:48 to 13:11. 12:48 to 13:11. Stop. Okay. Stop. Yeah, and that's what James is doing. He goes, "Don't laugh if you can't demonstrate it's not true." Well, no, he's laughing at him because he's presenting all of these things that he considers facts, but he has nothing to demonstrate this with, other than Hadith literature, and other than, who, Hamza? I would think that he would at least have some type of familiarity with the Hadith literature and with the Sirah. I think that he probably has a degree of familiarity with it, not knowing exactly what it says, but he does show that he does at least have a passing knowledge of it. So you're probably right that he doesn't know, but the point that I was trying to make with this is that he's getting, let's just give him the benefit of the doubt. And let's just say that he does know these things about Muhammad and the pre-Islamic history. Well, how does he know this? Where does he get that information from? Well, he gets that information from, if you're getting it from the Sirah, according to Ibn Hisham, who wrote on a century after Ibn Hishaq, who lived a century after Muhammad, you're quoting fairy tales about Muhammad in a biography written two centuries later. The other thing that we'd look at is the Hadith literature. When we look at the Hadith literature, this was not compiled. It was not compiled until 250 years after the death of Muhammad. And the earliest extant manuscript that we have of the Hadith literature, of Bukhari anyway, is four centuries after the death of Muhammad. Right, yeah, because it was written down and compiled. Right, this is the Umayyad dynasty that's pushing this stuff.
which of course they didn't. They did not. They would never have some type of political agenda or motivation to do this. The Abbasid, that's what I meant. I'm sorry. I get too mixed up. Sorry. The Umayyad was the first one, and the Abbasid was the second. I get the A and the U, and that's just that's how my brain thinks. Sorry. Okay. Hamza, why does it keep interrupting junk? Well, this is the way that they roll on Speaker's Corner. Dominic can tell you. Then you get to saying something, they interrupt you. This is Bob the Builder was doing was talking to a group of people, and this Muslim guy comes up and he just starts interrupting. Then he'll ask Bob a question. Bob will start answering the question, and then he'll interrupt Bob with another question. This is what they do. This is their method of argumentation to try to shout you down. That's why they do it. This is just not meant to intimidate. Okay, let's get halfway through this at least. 15 minutes, 12 seconds to 15 minutes, 16 seconds. Only 4-second clip here. Here we go. All right, go ahead. Okay, so do you know the history of Muhammad? Do you know the history? The sacred history that we have, right? And all the while, not having a clue to what that history is predicated on. I don't know. I would at least hope that if you're going to run your mouth that loudly at Speaker's Corner, that you would have have at least an understanding of what was the question? He says, do you know the history of Muhammad? Well, we do. And when we do, then that's going to cause you to get all your undies in a bunch and start trying to shout people down. Because when they say, okay, well, Mecca didn't exist at this time. So if Mecca didn't exist, Muhammad supposedly lived there. Well, then what is the likelihood that Muhammad existed in Mecca at that time? That would be zero. So that when you start talking history, and this is why I love doing this history piece, because number one, this is what my undergrad stuff is history. But it clearly shows that is a black hole that they are not going to be overcome. When we did the history when we did the Ptolemy thing 2 weeks ago, do you guys remember that video that I showed of how Mecca has been built up over the last 20 years? That right there is a death nail in their coffin, because what you can clearly see is the building on top of all of this, all of these places that supposedly are supposed to contain. And if I was a director of antiquity someplace, or an archaeologist, or somebody that is remotely interested in the history of this religion, I would be having a heart attack. I would be screaming at the top of the hill. What are you doing? And you're not providing us an ability to come in here and examine what's underneath all of this dirt. And the reason why they did that is because they know there's not anything there. They know there's not a thing there, because if there was, we most certainly would have seen it by now. He's contradicted himself. Right. Yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah, that is exactly what he's doing. Yeah. Right. We all know that Dawaganis never really contradicted himself. Let me remove this. I'm sorry. Let me just play this clip here for you guys, because this clip is just devastating to the Islamic argument. Let me see here. Add to stream. Come on. I thought I removed it. Remove. Hold on. Stop screen. All right. Let me redo this again.
because they play some really good music here too. I was like, really kicking the music. Uh-oh. Is that? Whoa, that's not it. That's not it. Where'd it go? I just had it. There it is. Can you guys see that? Uh-oh. Ruh-roh, Raggy. How about... I'm trying to... This is so pathetic. I don't understand. Okay, just never mind. All right, never mind. I was going to show you the building of Mecca over the last 20 years, how they built on top of all the archaeology. Okay, so let's see. Do you know the history of Muhammad? We did that one, and that's where we're going to, because the next one was, well, they can't show. Right. And that's the point. He's not there. That's the point. Okay, Dominic had a great point here with the temple sifting project, where all of that dirt from underneath the Temple Mount was being taken out of the city and just dumped. And you had Jews go in there and they sifted through there and they found all kinds of artifacts from that history. Now that actually has a 3,500 year history. When we start talking about, we know that the Jewish temple in that location existed for 3,500 years, and they're finding artifacts. I don't know if they found artifacts that push it back that far, but they do find it that it pushes it back at least 3,000 years. And when they find these things, you can clearly demonstrate. What you can do is then you can demonstrate that, hey, look, this existed at this time. We know this has existed at this time, and therefore that lends some type of veracity, credibility to our faith system. Whereas when you look at Mecca, you don't have anything there. So how can you say that your faith system and the history behind Muhammad, and you try to castigate people for not knowing, you know, who Muhammad was or what he did or any of that garbage? How can you do that with any semblance of integrity? I'm trying to get this to come off here. You can't. Well, the fact of the matter is that they find. Oh, you mean something that proves that Jeremiah was an actual prophet in Israel at one time? Oh, my goodness. Can't have any of that. Of the what tablet? Oh, no, yeah, that was like a silver script. It was about this big where they unrolled it. I don't know if they found that at Temple Mount, but I do know. Oh, was it? Okay. Well, mentioning Gideon. Yeah. Yeah. It's a period of judges. This is would be what, second judges? I may be wrong on that, but it's... Well, that's right. I'm sorry. I meant the second chapter of judges. I'm sorry. Okay. So let's go ahead and do a round robin here. We'll finish this up next week. And I'll even start in on part two of this screed here. And I sent him an email. I sent the EF Dawa group an email to let them know that, you know, we would be discussing some of the things one of their members is saying on Speaker's Corner. And I guess that the next time I send something to them, I should just say how embarrassing it is. And you might want to think about taking it down because, well, we're having a ball with it. Okay, so let's start with Ed. Do you have anything that you want to add tonight before we cut out of here? The reason I say that is I got church in 13 minutes. Sorry. Okay, Paul, you got anything you want to add tonight? Amen. Amen. All right, Darcy, anything that you would like to add tonight? All right. Yeah. Oh, yes. Like, subscribe, hit the bell for notifications. Right. Okay. Connie, go ahead. Yeah, we were reading Joel this morning during Sunday school. And actually, we're looking in the book of Acts and then how Peter in the second chapter refers to Joel. If you'll seek him, and God will press upon you using the Spirit. Okay, Isa. Isa, are you there still, sir? Here you are there. Hi. Amen. Amen. This is America after, well, except for Dominic. He's the only foreigner here today anyway. that's not a bad thing. All right, Dominic, you got anything you want to add to all this? Okay, well, we appreciate all everything that you have contributed today. And, of course, the radical one, anything that you need to say, say your piece tonight, Rad. Yes, I do need to play that. Okay, so let me just say this, that you know the when I was approaching this, and this is the way that I'm going to approach all of this in the future, and this I think this is a avenue in which people who are Islamic polemicists should practice, is that any time that a fact or some type of assertion, Islamic assertion is made, we need to take them back to the foundation, take them back to where we can clearly demonstrate where the strength is here, where we can clearly demonstrate, you know, we can sit here and argue all day about Muhammad and what a great man he was, and he did this and he did that, or you can go into the Quran and say, well, the Quran says this, and, you know, they'll play the miracle of reinterpretation or whatever that is. But you take them back to the foundation. If you take that foundation out from them and saying, look, you're saying all these things occurred in Mecca. You're saying that this was something that happened in Mecca and Muhammad did a hijra. You have to take them back and say, okay, prove to me, show me where we can find Mecca. And if you want to, you can email me and I'll send you that slideshow that I did. That we did 2 weeks ago on challenging Ptolemy's, or this assertion that Ptolemy mentions Mecca, which he, number one, he clearly doesn't. Number two, he was never in Arabia. But number three, it's in the wrong location. So when you can, but if you get that slideshow and you go through there and you go through all of the cartographers and the geographers that I cite, writers, people were there, they all describe that region as being uninhabitable. Those people who did make that trek through that region, none of them mentioned Mecca. And you have the sources there and what they said. I cite the paper in the book that I drew the majority of that information from, and there's no way out for them. What are they going to cite? What are they going to say that we have this overwhelm? You know, if we were to say that, let's say Jerusalem, when we're going to make a comment on Jerusalem, what other type of sources can we use outside of the Bible to demonstrate that Jerusalem existed 3,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago at the time of Christ? To say that that Jerusalem did not exist or Israel did not exist as a nation at that time is absolutely insane. You can't do that. However, think about how you can actually do that with Mecca and with Islam. You can make that charge because there is nothing there. And this idea has been building for the past, I don't know, 30 years plus, demonstrating that. So when you get people like little Hamza here, not Colin Will, I shouldn't say that. I don't know how tall he is or whatever, but I'm just saying, if you have somebody like Hamza here,
making these assertions, saying, well, you know, prior to, you know, for 40 years prior to the advent of Islam, Muhammad was making these statements from Mecca. No, he wasn't, Hamza. You cannot say that, because we know, based on evidence, based on what we can measure, things that we can test, that Mecca didn't exist at that time. Unless you have something other than your Islamic sources that were written compiled 2 centuries later after this, you have no leg to stand on. So that is, you know, going to be, you know, when after watching this, I was thinking, you know, this is just going to be my new approach to it. If you're going to engage with these guys, I'm going right to the foundational supposition, which is Mecca. If you don't have Mecca, you don't have Muhammad. You don't have Muhammad, you don't have Islam, and you don't have a denial of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And that is the main purpose why we come here every Sunday afternoon and do this show. Again, everybody that was in the chat today, God bless you. Thank you so much for coming and spending your time. I know there's 1,000 things that you guys could be doing besides sitting here listening to us rant and rave on this show. And everybody, of course, on the panel, everything that you guys do contribute, God bless you for it. And I do appreciate and love all of you so very much for doing this, making the show so much fun to do. We're going to leave it at, oh, we got to play something here. Rad might get mad at me. I don't want to get bad on the Rad side, or Rad on the, it doesn't matter. Let's go ahead and play this. All right, that's the end of the YouTube stream. Let me go over here and end it over here on Blog Talk Radio. Folks, we'll see you.